Wow, that was incredible. I kept saying all week I didn't know if I'd ever get to do this again. And to be able to this tournament and then to win the point, my goodness, the last time I played, I was the point to lose the Ryder Cup. So if this is my last round as a player, maybe it is, I'm happy with that.
Well, we thank NBC Sports for that audio from Keegan Bradley. We welcome you to another episode of Musings on Golf as we recap yet another victory for the United States in the President's Cup. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my partner, Bob Bubka, and we are delighted to welcome back a great friend of our show who just covered his eighth President's Cup for Golf Channel and NBC Sports. He was there at Royal Montreal early in the week, and by Sunday afternoon, the U.S. had won its 13th President's Cup in 15 tries. Steve Sands, my fellow Washingtonian, it's great to have you with us again on Musings on Golf.
It's great to be 3-1. The Commanders are looking good, Kelly Elbin. All righty.
Yeah, baby. Love it.
Come on.
Hey, thanks for doing this, Steve. And let me start off with kind of an oddball question. Is it really good for the President's Cup that the United States wins almost every year?
It's not an oddball question at all, Bob. That's the big question in the sport. I don't think it's good. I mean, take Kelly and I. You know, born and raised in the Washington area, big time Commanders fans. You know, if you play the Cowboys and the Giants and the Eagles over the course of 15 straight times and one team wins 13 or 14 of them, well, that's not really a rivalry. And to me, sports has got to be a back and forth. There's got to be a tete-a-tete between the internationals and the Americans. And the Ryder Cup has more history than the President's Cup. We all know that. But the Ryder Cup also has, you know, a little bit of bad blood in a good sports sense. It's got a back and forth. We, you know, never see the Americans go over to Europe and win, not in the last, you know, however many years. And when Bethpage comes around next year, it's going to be awfully tough for the Europeans to get a win on Long Island. So I think the President's Cup will only rise in stature if it becomes more competitive. Right now, it's just not very competitive.
Steve, let me ask you, is there anything that you can think of that could alter that?
You know, I remember when Greg Norman was captain all the way back at Harding Park in 09, and then it was Nick Price for a while, and then it was Ernie Els. You know, condensing the points, Bob, I think would help. I think that, you know, in the Ryder Cup, I think the depth of the American side, 1 through 12, is what gives the international side so much trouble in the President's Cup. In the Ryder Cup, you're not hiding. That's the wrong way to put it, because it's 24 world-class players. They're all great, great players. There's no debate on that, whether it's the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup. But when you only play 8 of the 12 on Friday morning, Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, as opposed to the President's Cup, which is 4 days and 5-5, then 4-4 until the Sunday singles, those two extra points, it used to be more, those two extra points are a lot. And I think that when the Americans play 10 of 12 versus the internationals 10 of 12, it might be different if it was 8 versus 8 as opposed to 9 versus 9 through 12 being on the course at any given time the first 3 days. So to me, if they shorten the event, whether they went 4 days to 3 days, I understand why they don't, television and money and sponsorships and all that, Bob. But to me, if they just lessened the point total, I think that would help. I think if the Ryder Cup had more points like the President's Cup, I think the Americans would probably dominate the Ryder Cup more than they do already.
Do you see them doing anything soon?
Oh, man. You have to think they will, Bob. I think at some point, now, look, it's money. It's commercialized. Sponsorships. The event makes money. It does well. But, you know, for television, for viewership, for the sake of the competitive nature of the event, you'd like to think that they could all get together, Bob, and say, okay, what's the best way to make this more competitive? Is the Ryder Cup more competitive because it's more compelling because of the nature of the event, the history of it, and the rivalry of it? Or is it more compelling because it's more competitive because of the system they have in place at the Ryder Cup? I'll leave that up to the experts, Bob, but you have to think in Ponte Vedra Beach they're contemplating at least altering it a little bit before going to Medina in a couple of years, because currently it's not working, right? I mean, it's 13-1-1, and let's face it, 18.5 to 11.5, that's a blowout in golf. You're not talking about 7 points in football. This isn't a touchdown here. 7 points in golf over 4 days is a long day. By the way, it was tied after 2 days. There was a 7-point difference on Saturday and Sunday, Bob. That's a huge, huge difference.
It's just amazing how dominant the U.S. squad has been. But I really agree with you. The more players you put out there, the bigger advantage it is for the American side.
It is
why it helps the Ryder Cup side.
I agree with you. I think that, to me, it's at least worth a try. I understand they want 4 days versus three. There's television, there's money, there's sponsorships. I understand all of that. But let's figure out a way to make it 28 points over 4 days if you want to keep that fourth day and you don't want it to look so similar and feel so similar to a Ryder Cup. I understand they want to make a difference. I understand all that. But it'd be nice if they tried something different just to see if it would make a difference in the outcome.
Hey, Steve, wondering, were you at all surprised that it was so lopsided over the weekend? I mean, it went from 5-0 U.S. to 5-5 after Friday, and it clearly the internationals had all the momentum, and then that never materialized on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I was surprised at the margin of victory, Kelly, after it being 5-5. When it was 5-0 after Thursday, I thought, okay, the Americans are going to get to 18, 19, 20 points. I did not think they would get to 18.5 points in the final 2 days. That's 13.5 points in the final 2 days. I mean, that's 13.5 out of 20. Okay, it's 4-4 and then 12. So that's a whitewashing. You know, that's a blowout. And again, this has nothing to do with the 12 players on the international side per se. They just got run over. That happens in sports. I mean, you know, that's the way it works. Sometimes it gets tight. Sometimes it flips around. And sometimes there are blowouts. And there are world-class players on both sides. But for sure, Kelly, I didn't see a 7-point win after it was 5-5 on Friday night.
Let me ask you this. Other than Hollywood writing the script, do you think there's any way possible that Keegan Bradley comes up getting the winning point?
I mean, it's hard to believe. Look, the three of us are big-time sports fans, not just golf people. And people laugh at me, my friends and family, they laugh at me because of the romantic nature of sports kind of lends itself to these types of situations, Bob. Keegan Bradley basically got screwed in not being selected to be on the American side last year in Italy in the Ryder Cup. He comes back and gets into the BMW Championship only because Tom Kim had a bad finish the week prior in Memphis that allowed Keegan to get in to the top 50. He then wins the BMW Championship, which puts him on the radar for Captain Jim Furyk, who then you have to take him. He's one of the hottest players. He just won a playoff event. And he gets named Ryder Cup captain and all the scenarios there just before that BMW championship. Everywhere in the playoffs, he's running around, Bob, and people are yelling USA at him in red, white, and blue. He's Captain America. You can forget Patrick Reed for now. Keegan Bradley is Captain America. And then all of a sudden, he captain of the Ryder Cup team, he gets named. He wins the BMW championship after being the last guy in the field. He gets selected by Jim Furyk. And then, lo and behold, on Sunday, he's the clinching point. You can't make it up. To me, it's one of the great things about sports. Again, my friends and family laugh at me when I tell them these kinds of things. I'm like, you can't make it up. How can you make it up? It's fantastic.
Yeah, you couldn't go to Hollywood and get a script like that. What are your one or two big takeaways from this President's Cup?
I think a couple things. After 2018 and France, I'm happy for Jim Furyk, who has been a stalwart PGA Tour member, just a presence on the PGA Tour and a pros pro. You know, he's a pros pro. Jim Furyk, I'm happy for him that he got a win I love Mike Weir. He's one of the all-time great guys in the sport. In his home country, I feel badly that it didn't go his way. But I was happy for some of the guys who played. I was happy for Patrick Cantlay. After all the crap he got in Italy for all the things on and off the golf course, Patrick Cantlay played great. He was 4-1. He was fantastic. But I'm mostly happy for the guys and Jim Furyk. But I'm also a little bit sad for Mike Weir that it wasn't tighter, that he didn't get to enjoy Sunday a little bit more or a little bit longer, if you will.
What about the absence of the LIV players?
You know, someone asked me that yesterday, Bob. Now, you can look at it two ways. Now, think about this. Yes, Abraham Answer, Cam Smith, and Joaquin Niemann would help the international side. Maybe even Louis Oosthuizen, maybe a Mark Leishman, if they're playing well, which, you know, who knows if they're playing well. It's hard to judge from the LIV side of things. That's fine and good, right? But on the American side, Bob, you want Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and Bryson DeChambeau? So, you know, careful what you wish for if you're an international team fan and you're wondering if the result would have been different, because the different result may have been 20-10 and not 18.5-11.5. So you never know. Bryson, Brooks, and perhaps Dustin, Cam, Joaquin, Abraham, Answer. I mean, you know, I would probably go with the Americans in that equation.
We'll have more from Steve Sands after these messages from our partners.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Pleased to be joined by our good friend Steve Sands of NBC Sports and Golf Channel. We're recapping the 2024 President's Cup here on Musings on Golf. Okay, Steve, let's go back to a couple of things we talked about earlier. First with Keegan.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on him? Is the potential real, if he keeps playing well, of actually being a playing captain at Bethpage Black next September at the Ryder Cup?
Love it, Kelly. Come on, Keegan. I want to see that happen just because I think it would be a very cool thing for the event. I'm afraid that Keegan's the kind of guy, he's such a nice guy and has such reverence for the event, Kelly. I'm afraid that he will make the team and then not play until the singles, just sit himself out. And he'll be one of the guys who would sit himself out on Friday morning, Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, and then have to play in the Sunday singles. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think Keegan, if he is in the top eight, you know, obviously he's going to be, or top six, whatever it is next year. Has he decided yet? I forget. They change it every year. I'm not sure if he's made that decision yet, but let's just say he makes it automatically, whatever the number is, 6, 8, 10. If it's going to be 6, 4, or 2 captain's picks, whatever it is. I don't think he'll take himself as a captain's pick, Kelly. I do think that if he makes the team on points, he will take that spot. And I think that, you know, he'll use it however he wishes. I do not think there's any scenario that any player, especially a guy like Keegan, who has such reverence for his fellow golfers, his fellow professionals, and the event itself, I can't imagine him taking a captain's pick away from somebody because he's already going to be there as the captain. But I think it'd be awesome, Kelly, don't you? If he played, if he made it and played, I mean, what is it? You're talking about a very, very select company there. And I think
Arnold was the last, right?
Arnold was the last. I mean, it would be very, very cool. By the way, Bethpage Black, Kelly, come on, man. That place is going to be rocking. He's a St. John's guy. I know he's a New England guy, but he's a St. John's guy. He's a rah-rah guy. Fans love him. They know he's a red, white, and blue to the core kind of guy. Imagine him getting announced on the first tee as the captain and playing with somebody on Friday and Saturday before those singles matches. That would be such a cool scene. I hope it happens. I love Keegan. I think it'd be really cool for him. And I think it'd be cool for the event if he did.
How happy is the PGA of America right now? I mean, initially, right? The questions of, come on, Keegan Bradley, really?
Right.
So now he is, and the momentum continues. He will be the talk of much of 2025.
100%. This is an absolute boon, as if it needed any, a boon to the Ryder Cup. This is what this is what needs to happen, Kelly, for the President's Cup, not the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup doesn't need the juice, and it's going to receive the juice, and that's going to be awesome. And good for the PGA of America. I know Tiger was slated for it, and Tiger decided not to do it, and then they had to go to Plan B, if you will, and they had a lot of choices to make. I like that they turned it over. It's time for Webb Simpson and Keegan Bradley and some of these younger guys. No offense to the older guys, because I'm one of the older guys. You're one of you. The three of us are the old guys. But it's time to turn the page a little bit. Time to turn that over. I thought, you know what made me happy last week? Russell Henley. Russell Henley deserves that type of accolade. He played well in that spot. He performed admirably. And I was so happy for him. I like it when these teams and these captains take someone and these organizations take someone. You know, I remember when Paul McGinley, who I love as a person, you know, Americans are like, Paul McGinley, what's he doing being captain? What has he ever done? Why is he, you know, all of a sudden risen to the stature of being a Ryder Cup captain? Well, guess what? He's never lost, right? Paul McGinley's a great captain. You know, I think it's really cool. For Keegan, I think it's great for the PGA of America. Kelly, that's an awesome point. And he's going to ride that wave. You know, Keegan's one of those guys who's accessible, not afraid, and isn't afraid to kind of rah-rah stir it up a little bit. I think you're going to see a lot of USA chants for the next 12 months before going to Bethpage Black at every PGA Tour event and the PGA Championship. And that is a credit to the PGA of America for reaching out to Keegan. And for Keegan Bradley himself, who's a well-deserving captain, it just seemed like a choice at the time that people took a half step back. The guy's a PGA champion. The guy knows what he's doing. He's performed very, very well in Ryder Cups and in President's Cups. He's very well liked among his peers, very well respected as well. I think it's awesome for the PGA of America. It's a great point. They will be riding that PGA of America wave all the way to Bethpage next year.
Let me share with you a Russell Henley story.
Yeah.
He wins over in Hawaii, and he's being brought into that media tent, which only held about 6 people.
Right.
And he comes walking in the back of the tent, and he's on the speakerphone, and you hear his mom say, "Russell, you got to smile more. You just won the tournament. Not smiling enough." And Russell has no idea being broadcast to all of the media there, all 6 of us. But
that's a lesson to all of us, Bob. My Bonnie Sands is no longer alive, but let me tell you something. When mom speaks, you better listen.
Yeah, that is well put, Mr. Steve Sands.
Hey, Steve, I want to hear from, I know we've got some good audio from Jim Furyk, but just retrace a couple steps here. What were your thoughts in general of the jobs that the two captains did? I know you said you were happy for Furyk. You wished it might have turned out better for Mike Weir. What do you think they did as captains?
I think that, you know, look, we can criticize all day long. You never know, you know, how it all plays out. I was a little surprised about the game plan on Saturday from Mike Weir and the international side. It seems like, and I don't know this, but it seems like they stuck to the exact same game plan that they had. And I think when you're coming off of a 5-0 day on Friday and have all that momentum you alluded to earlier, perhaps you might want to take a half step back and say, you know, is this the right thing to do? Or do we want to stick with our game plan from earlier in the week? Jason Day sitting out seemed like a little bit of an odd choice to me on both days, on both sessions on Saturday. But I am not here to criticize Mike Weir. He knows his team. He knows his assistant captains, and he knows the guys better than anybody. We're not privy to be in that room. But it did seem like a little bit of an odd choice that Minwoo Lee and Jason Day didn't play at all on Saturday, especially coming off of the 5-0 day on Friday. That's the first thing. For Jim, I mean, look, I think Jim learned a lot in 2018 in Paris as a losing captain for the United States team in the Ryder Cup. Sometimes I think, you know, I had this discussion with a couple of people last week, and one of them is a potential captain in the future, and one of them has been a captain already. And the conversation went kind of like this. Why are professional golfers who get to the point where they can be a captain of a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup team, why do they over-captain? They're all sports fans. They're all professional golfers. They've all been on those teams. Why don't they captain the way they thought they should have been captained when they played? Instead, they kind of go about their business in a different way, and sometimes they get in their own way. Take Fred Couples, for instance. 3-0 as a President's Cup captain. Here you go, guys. Who wants to play with whom? Have at it. Some guys over-captain. Some guys don't captain enough, and there's a mix in between. I thought Jim did a fabulous job. He won by 7, Kelly. I mean, you know, your coaches, you know, it's kind of like, when I was doing all the interviews on NBC for all those years, I used to say to people you say to me all the time about the interviews, I said, listen, we're only as smart as the people we talk to. So captains and coaches in team sports, managers in baseball, are only as great as their players, as the product they have put in front of them. And then it's up to them to be a leader. I thought Jim did a wonderful job last week of both understanding the playing side of his 12 guys, having all that experience, and also having an understanding of what it's like to captain, having done it already in Paris in 2018. And I thought Mike did a good job. I just think that the international captains, whether it's Trevor Immelman or Ernie or Mike or Nick or Greg or whoever it is, they're just up against it, Kelly. I mean, you go 12 versus 12, man. It's just over the course of 4 days, it's just not going to happen. You're going to have one bad day, but PGA Tour players, Kelly and Bob, you guys know this very well. PGA Tour players who win always tell you they always have one bad day. Now, if they can make that bad day a 71 as opposed to a 75, then they're going to be in better shape. So the internationals played poorly one day, really poorly on Thursday, and then the Americans got their butts kicked on Friday. So you're always going to have one bad day over the course of four, whether it's a team competition or individual. But I thought both captains, you know, did what they needed to do. And I think the result was, you know, relatively inevitable, don't you think?
I do. Love that perspective. Let's hear what Captain Furyk had to say as to why he thought his guys got it done.
Guys played their hearts out this week, and they really, really played well in the back nine. We talked about being a dog all week, being the tougher team. I just feel like those back nine holes, if you looked at how many holes won and lost, I got to feel like we kind of owned the back nine this week, and that was the difference.
Well, there you go, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Jim for a long time on Wednesday before it started, and he knew his guys were ready, Kelly. His guys were ready. They're playing well. The golf course suited them. They have a lot of confidence. I don't know why the Americans are more relaxed in a President's Cup. I'm not quite sure what that is, but they are more relaxed. There's no debate about it. And the energy level is the same. You know, the when you're on the road, it's not quite the same because it's not Europe. It's international, so it's a lot. You know, you have some Canadians there, but you have Canadian fans rooting for South Koreans and rooting for Japan and rooting for South America, South Africa. They're rooting for Canada, the whole thing. It's a little bit of a different feel, but I think Jim knew his guys were ready to play, Kelly. And I also think Jim knew that he had the better team. And if they performed well, that they were going to get the win. And they did.
Kind of in wrapping up the year, Steve. I mean, it's really been a tremendous golf season. Xander wins two majors. Scheffler wins the Masters, seven total. First to do it since Tiger. You had that incredible bunker shot by Bryson to win the U.S. Open. Oh, and Scottie Scheffler also wins the Olympics. I mean, you know, we kind of sometimes get bogged down. I know I do in the talk about LIV Golf, the PGA Tour. But man, what happened in golf in 2024 was really stellar, Steve.
Oh, it was awesome. It was an awesome, awesome season in golf. You know, would it be better if everybody came together? Would it be better if there wasn't, you know, a fractured nature in the sport? Sure. But the PGA Tour had an outstanding season as far as its winners. Scottie Scheffler is an absolute rock star, and he does it with his clubs. He doesn't do it with his mouth. And it's not like that. He is just a great, great person and a great, great player who is carrying the mantle. Shoffley would have been player of the year on the PGA Tour pretty much every other year in the last 10 years if it wasn't for Scottie Scheffler. But Scotty was a deserving winner, capping it off with that 60, you know, the FedEx Cup, but also the 62 on Sunday to win a gold medal. I mean, my gosh, you know, this guy's building a resume that's becoming amazingly stellar. And it's fun to watch. And I think, you know, the U.S. Open was great. You know, there were a lot of really good finishes on the PGA Tour. Some stars emerged. Ludvig Åberg is now a household name internationally and in the United States. Nick Dunlap winning twice, one of them as an amateur. And by the way, don't poo-poo that win at the American Express, fellas, in January. Scotty and a lot of guys were in the field that week, and he beat them all as an amateur. Went back to University of Alabama, turned professional because he kind of had to. It would have been foolish not to. And then he wins again this season on the PGA Tour. So I think the game is in good shape. Clearly, there's a lot going on politically, you know, between the PGA Tour and LIV and the players back and forth. And can we get them together? Hopefully that sorts itself out in the next year or two. But I'm with you, Kelly. It was an outstanding golf season on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, two more from me before I turn it over to Bob. I'm wondering, you're a busy guy. Does the end of the President's Cup mean an end to your year of work as far as televised golf? And how many events will you work total this year? How many next year?
Don't have the schedule for next year, but I'm glad I'm going to be on it. They're going to have me for another year. This year with the Summer Olympics, this year it's I think it's 29 or 30. And it's a busy year, but it you know, you're never going to hear me complain about it. I'm happy to do it. It's great. But the Summer Olympics makes it a little bit busier. We had the Summer Olympics and the FedEx Cup playoffs on NBC and Golf Channel. So that was a 5-week stretch. The week before that, a couple of days in between the Open Championship and that. So it was a busy summer, and that added a couple of weeks. But the fall continues. We are taping this at what, 2:30, 3 p.m. Eastern on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm getting on a flight tonight and going to do the Sanderson Farms. Also doing the Shriners this fall and the RSM Classic. So three of the next six. And then a week off for Thanksgiving. And then the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas, that's Tiger's event. We have that one. And the PNC Challenge, the father-son. And that'll close out the year. So, you know, I've always been a big believer, guys. I don't know about you. I mean, I love golf and I love watching it. I've always thought that golf needs a break. not us. It doesn't matter. I'm not talking about us, but the sport. I think that golf in the fall, you know, doesn't get as much viewers because of football and baseball playoffs and everything cranking up in the fall, that kind of thing. And I think it'd be nice for golf fans to kind of want it a little bit more after not seeing it for a few months. But golf continues. The PGA Tour schedule continues. And we'll be there, and we'll be there happily. Looking forward to the Sanderson Farms. It should be a lot of fun.
Steve, final question from me, and you've been kind enough to join us in the past. I don't believe that I asked you this question, but we ask this every time as sort of a closing query, if you will, of a magical round of golf. If you could play with three others in a sort of a dream foursome, whether those three are living or deceased, who would they be, and where would you play?
I would definitely play the old course at St. Andrews. That's my favorite course. I mean, Augusta's amazing. Pine Valley's amazing. Pebble Beach, Cypress Point, whatever you want to do. But to me, the old course is the best place on earth to watch golf and to play golf. To have a beer at the Dunvegan, to hang out in that town is the best. I'm going to give you two answers on the dream foursome. My serious answer, now my ridiculous answer would be Elle McPherson, Halle Berry, and Blake Lively would round out that foursome. But my serious one would be my father, who passed away in April, my two brothers, my older brother, David, my younger brother, Michael, the four of us in 1995 went over to Scotland, and my dad took us over there and we played the old course. I have a picture in my house of the four of us, my two brothers, my older brother, David, my younger brother, Michael, me, and my dad. If we could bring my dad back, which would be amazing, I would love to have him and my two brothers join us on the first tee at the old course one more time. That'd be awesome.
What was your dad like on the golf course, by the way?
Well, when he was younger, he was pretty good. You know, 11, 12, you know, as he got older, I never really got to see him, you know, play his excellent golf when he was a single digit handicap. But he loved it. He was competitive. And he loved getting out there with his boys. He loved getting out there with his friends. He enjoyed the game very much. He enjoyed you guys very much. After my mother passed away, he moved down to the Palm Beach Gardens, West Palm Beach area, where I know you live, Kelly. And we had talked about you before, Kelly. He knows who Bob is from his work. My dad was a monster sports fan. He watched everything Washington. He was all about it in every sport, and he'd watch any sport anytime. But when his teams were on, he was into it. And he used to listen to your guys' show and tell me all the time how much he enjoyed both of you and your guys' work. So it was he was cool. He was a cool dude, and it was a great run. He lived to be almost 85, so very lucky.
I'd love to share with him. First time I met Steve Sands, he was like a little baby chick being let loose in the coop, scurrying around trying to do whatever he could do to make it right. And from that humble beginning, became one of the best golf announcers that ever got behind a microphone. Congratulations on your entire body of work, Steve Sands. You bring a lot to the game. You bring a lot to golf fans, and it's been a real honor to have you here on Musings on Golf.
The honor is all mine, Bob. I appreciate the kind words very much. You know, I joke around all the time and say we're just clowns in the circus, but it is an honor to do what we do. It's an honor to be on your guys' show, but, you know, to have the seat we have for all these years and all these amazing moments that have been put forth in front of us by the best players on the planet, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. So I'm a very, very lucky man.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry.
We really appreciate Steve Sands from NBC Sports for joining us to recap the President's Cup
on Musings on Golf.